From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Entrepreneurs talk a lot about transparency. It's become one of those common sense words, like transparent? Yes, of course you should be transparent. But then what? What does transparency look like? And to whom are you supposed to be this magical piece of see-through glass? To clients? To employees? The answer is that it's a personal decision. There's no one right way to be transparent. You just do what's right for you. And if you're looking for guidance, there's really no better way to think about transparency than to hear it from someone who's embraced its upsides and downsides.
Beck Bessiker believes in transparency.
That's Entrepreneur's executive editor, Joe Cohane, who's going to take the story from here. Because this guy Beck he talked to really, really believes in transparency.
In fact, he calls Marxon, the company he co-founded with his brother, aggressively transparent. Everyone can talk to everyone else. Everyone has a voice. Everyone has access to management. Most important, everyone is trusted. There's an assumption that the employees of Marxon are professional, responsible, mature adults, and thus they're completely capable of taking bad news and just rolling with it. That is, until the news got really bad. Marxon lost a client, but it wasn't just any client.
Massively important. Like, the entire company important.
And when Beck got this very bad news, he had to ask himself, how much do I really value transparency? How much do I really trust my employees to take what could be very, very bad news without quitting or freaking out or breaking down? And what he discovered actually shocked him. What was it? We'll get back to it after this break.
My wife and I recently got a book deal. So, yay, exciting. But then the contract came and I needed to print 4 copies of the last page and have us both sign them and then mail it to our agent. And we don't have a printer at home and the nearest mailbox is 4 blocks away. And seriously, this whole thing took a week. I just kept thinking, there has got to be a better way to do this. And there is. SignEasy is an easy-to-use, simple, and legal way to digitally sign documents. You can sign them yourself from anywhere and on any device, or send documents to customers, partners, or colleagues for signing, and even track the progress of documents and get notified when one is signed. Or, let's face it, if you were my agent wondering, where is this contract already? You could have used SignEasy to send me a reminder. Please, 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 let us all agree to stop fussing with documents you have to print and sign and put in a mailbox. SignEasy is faster, easier, and safer. To get started for free, go to getsigneasy.com/podcast. Again, that's getsigneasy.com/podcast. And now on to our second sponsor. I was about to start recording this spot here for our new sponsor, ProsperWorks, but I wanted to know what someone who's used many CRMs thinks, because that's what ProsperWorks makes, a CRM. So I walked over to one of our sales guys, Jim, and I said, Jim, tell me what comes to mind when you hear the words CRM. And Jim sighs, and he says, they are so tedious. And to this, ProsperWorks says, we totally agree. ProsperWorks is a CRM company that knows CRMs are notoriously complicated and inefficient, but its software is the opposite. By integrating with tools you're already using and eliminating repetitive tasks with automation, ProsperWorks makes a beautiful, easy-to-use system that drives productivity to help you and your team sell more faster. Try ProsperWorks today for free using our link prosperworks.com/loveyourcrm. Again, prosperworks.com/loveyourcrm. Okay, let's get back to the story.
Okay, we're back. So before we get to Beck's crisis, here's a little backstory on Marxon.
We're almost a 70-person company, and we just passed the 6-year mark, actually, in June. And the company was founded by me and my brother, Barry. He's a math major, computer science guy. And so his personal passion is always sort of to build a version of the Matrix, if you will. And then our background is retail space. And so we sort of combine the two interests in trying to build, you know, visualization applications using AR and VR for the retail space.
Or in layman's terms.
So in a nutshell, if you're making a purchase that's going to cost a lot, so think kitchen, bathroom, living room, or put a deck on the back of your house, there's a big, call it imagination gap for most customers. where they can't see the finished product. And if they can't see the finished product, they're less likely to buy. And so what we do is use virtual reality and augmented reality to let them see their final purchase virtually before they put pen to paper. We were 3 people through 2011, 7 people through 2012, 20 people in 2013, and then we jumped to 60 in about 4 months after that.
The company was growing fast, and a big part of the success, Beck believes, was the culture that he and his brother created at Marksand.
Our large view of culture is, you know, we flip our organizational chart, so leadership is on the bottom. We talk a lot about servant leadership and what that looks like. And then we have a lot of, you know, sort of rituals within the company where people can communicate across channels and people can communicate directly with leadership.
Define servant leadership for me.
You know, when you think about accomplishing your task or how you interact with people, it's, you know, you're either A, getting them the resources they need or the information they need in the direction they need, and then largely getting out of the way. The ratio I give to people is you can use authority to get things done 5% of the time. You know, but if you use your authority to do that, you need to announce it. You need to say, look, guys, you know, this is one of the rare instances I'm going to make the call here so we can move on because we got a deadline or a timeline or something we have to meet, but we're going in this direction. Otherwise, you should be using relationship power and expertise to get things done. That's pretty simple.
And the cool thing is the employees really rose to the challenge. More than that, really. Beck says the culture sort of defends and reinforces itself like a living organism.
I talk a lot to the team about that I don't own the culture. Like, I can't. Once you get to this size, you just, it's not really yours anymore. It becomes theirs. And so we've had a couple of instances where it's interesting if somebody threatens it, that the company will kind of spit those people out. I actually had one instance where I had an employee call me, Barry and I were down in St. Pete, and this was up in Dayton, called me and said, hey, I had to let you know I let this guy, use the name Tony, go today. And this guy was his peer. So he actually fired a peer. Say, get up, take your stuff, get out of the office.
So he's given the authority to fire a peer?
Oh, no. No, not at all. He was like, listen, it was either him or the rest of us, so I let him go.
In other words, things were going well. The staff was firing on all cylinders. The business was growing. They even had great investor backing, including Dan Gilbert from Quicken Loans. But then came the problem. More than the problem, the extinction-level event. In late 2015, a Fortune 500 client that had been working with Marksand for 3 years decided to pull out and develop their own tech in-house. And Beck, for his part, had to decide how he was going to break this news to his staff.
I read like 6 books trying to figure out like what was I going to say to the employees. You have this like paternal instinct. You have this idea that it's your job to consume, you know, all the stress of these kinds of events. You know, keep everybody else sort of in the, you know, feeling good and happy and motivated and, you know, and positive. And your fear is like, man, if people think things are going south, that they're all going to leave. And then what do you do? And I asked a lot of, you know, seasoned managers for advice. And we've got a great network of advisors. And I got to tell you, most of the advice was to delay the conversation. But this was such an extreme situation where I just didn't have a choice. You know, I was going to have to share. And truthfully, I was scared to death. I had no idea what the outcome would be.
Beck decided he'd call an all-hands meeting and just level with his employees. No spin, no propaganda, no passing the buck. Just be as aggressively transparent as always. But he was still worried.
Those are usually, you know, 2 or 3 days of sleepless nights before it happens. And then, you know, you deliver it. It was a very like, hey, guys, I feel like I didn't do the right thing here. It was something, you know, in the relationship or sales side. You guys delivered on the product side. You know, sorry to let you down. And people, I got, you know, 100 emails the same day saying, we're there, let's keep going. And so I think the big takeaway for me there was people are, you know, if they feel a part of the team, they're much more resilient nobody jumped ship. Nobody even talked about jumping ship. You know, I think about like what Matt Ryan must feel right now after losing the Super Bowl last year, right? Like how motivated was he in the offseason? And so yeah. It was kind of like that, where it was like, you know, I'm going to want to run faster, work harder, lift more, and you know, travel more, research more, sell more, you know, work later. People really doubled down.
What was the holiday party like that year?
It must have been good because I don't remember. But actually, that's one of our core culture things. We have good parties, that is for sure.
And here's the thing. That big, crushing, terrifying failure ended up being a big win for Marksand in the long term.
And actually, in retrospect, it actually freed us up, you know, because we were building the product and we had our own ideas of how to execute it well. But often when you're working directly with a customer, you know, it's sort of a modified approach where you're sort of taking input from both pieces or parties. And so this way we were like, man, we know how this should work. And so we took that time in between and just doubled down and built a, you know, even better solution that, you know, even created even better results with our next customers. When you're early on and you're, you know, running and gunning, and we had, you know, another 10 clients at the same time too that were smaller, right? But you're running and gunning, trying to meet deadlines and commitments. And then all of a sudden when you can breathe and go, okay, guys, we know this works. We've seen it work. We've worked directly with thousands of customers where it worked. Like, what would we do? You know, we're customers too. What would we do now that we have this experience if we were going to do it right, the right way? And so it became this sort of huge sort of inhale of, okay, this is the way we'd approach it. Well, let's do that. And let's, and, you know, let's trust the next, you know, major customer to, you know, to come through. And it did. But that, you know, that 3 or 4 month period of just being able to do the right thing because we thought it was the right solution for the end customer was really liberating. And that kind of gave us the momentum to make our product much more scalable, much more repeatable. It also gave us opportunities to think about our economic model and our pricing and so forth as well.
And since then, business has been great. Markson has been growing 100% year over year. There were no layoffs after the disaster. In fact, employee retention has remained around 96% the whole time. And yes, it's a good product. And yes, it was launched at a time when virtual reality and augmented reality are really taking off. But without that carefully calibrated culture, without imparting complete trust in employees and opening lines of communications, success would have been far less assured. And if all this sounds radical, maybe it is. A lot of managers, frankly, don't trust their employees enough to even try this sort of thing. But the reality is they could. In fact, anyone can.
The big takeaway for me is on all this cultural stuff is that it's really not that hard. I always think of like people in business that act like they're on, you know, Mad Men. They talk like business people on TV. We have a no jargon rule. And I'll call you out in a meeting on it. People say like circle around or ping me, all that stuff. That we just try to be as, you know, real as you possibly can get. And if you were on the other side, what would you want to hear? And I think it actually can be that simple.
You're trying to act like normal functioning human beings, in other words.
Honestly, we wanted to go into a place where we wanted to work every day. Yeah. I mean, that was the big, you know, motivating driver for us.
And that's our show. Problem Solvers comes out every week. So to make sure that you don't miss an episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you love what we're doing, please also leave us a review. It totally helps us reach more people. That's our problem solving right here. And of course, there are a lot more stories like this one, along with practical advice on how to start and grow a business in Entrepreneur Magazine and on our website, entrepreneur.com. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Our producer is Nathan Latka. Again, my name is Jason Pfeiffer, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Let me know what you think about the show. You can find me on Twitter at HeyPfeiffer, H-E-Y-F-E-I-F-E-R. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.